Thank you to Piedmont Virginia Community College and to the Senior Statesmen of Virginia for hosting and co-sponsoring this candidate forum among the two candidates in Virginia running for Lieutenant Governor. Lieutenant Governors have two duties spelled out under Virginia's Constitution. One is being the presiding officer for the Virginia Senate. The second is that the presiding officer may break a tie in the 40-member Senate in certain cases and not in others. In addition, the Lieutenant Governor becomes acting governor if the governor should become temporarily unable to perform his duties, and governor should the governor leave office. There is a third, more traditional part of the job of Lieutenant Governor. That involves running for governor. They all do, and the winner will. Today's two candidates for Lieutenant Governor have been running for the office for months, and each has won a party primary election back in June. At the near podium is Justin Fairfax, who is a former Assistant U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia and Deputy Coordinator for the Northern Virginia Human Trafficking Task Force. Today, he practices law with a firm in Tyson's Corner with a focus on white-collar criminal defense and civil litigation. The Democratic Party nominee has not held elective office. He was a candidate for his party's nomination for Attorney General of Virginia 4 years ago. He's a graduate of Duke University and the Columbia Law School. He's a small business owner with his wife, Dr. Serena Fairfax, a dentist. They are the proud parents of a young son and daughter and reside in Fairfax County in Northern Virginia. At the far podium is Jill Vogel. She is the Republican Party's nominee and has served in the Virginia Senate since 2008, representing the Northern Virginia 27th Senatorial District. She's a graduate of the College of William and Mary and DePaul University Law School. She's an ethics attorney with experience in legal and policy positions both in and out of government. During her career, she worked in Washington and became Deputy General Counsel for the U.S. Department of Energy, working directly with the White House and the President's Cabinet on energy issues. As a senator, she chairs the Privileges and Elections Committee of the Virginia Senate and serves on the Senate Committee, Finance Committee, the most powerful committee in the Senate. She and her husband, Alex, reside in a rural area of Fauquier County in Northern Virginia with her four young children. The ground rules for today's forum are relatively simple. Each candidate will have an opening statement of up to 5 minutes and a closing statement of up to 2.5. The coin toss determined that Justin Fairfax will speak first in the opening and closing statements, and Jill Vogel will speak next. Candidates will be asked questions by me, the moderator, most of them written on cards by members of the audience. So if you would like to ask a question, just put your hand up, an usher can give you a card, and it'll be passed down to Terry Cooper, and Terry will sort the cards. He is under strict guidelines that the cards have to be legible. Also, I would urge you all to keep your questions short and in the form of a question. At 2:50 p.m., we will move on from questions to final statements. So each candidate will have 2 minutes to respond to a question, and then up to a minute for a rebuttal if they so choose. Now let's begin with our opening statements. According to the coin toss, Justin Fairfax will speak first. Justin, the floor is yours.
Yes. Thank you very much, Bob, and good afternoon to everyone assembled. Thank you so much for coming out to this Lieutenant Governor Forum. I want to thank Senator Jill Vogel for joining me here today. President Friedman, thank you for hosting the Senior Statesman of Virginia. I know the great work that you have done over the past 22 years in enhancing our civic life, and I want to thank you for what you have done. Also, Piedmont Virginia Community College. Your focus on education, on moving people forward, and growing our economy is exactly where we need to go in the future. As mentioned, my name is Justin Fairfax. I am the Democratic nominee for Lieutenant Governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. My wife, Dr. Serena Fairfax, and I live in Northern Virginia with our two kids, our son and our daughter. And I'm running for Lieutenant Governor of Virginia because we need to focus on growing Virginia's economy. We have had some great success over the past 4 years under the leadership of Governor Terry McAuliffe and Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam and Attorney General Mark Herring. We have a lot that we can celebrate about those 4 years. Unemployment has gone down from 5.4% when they took office to today 3.7%. They've been able to create 200,000 new jobs in the Commonwealth of Virginia to bring about $16 billion in additional capital investment to our great state. And that is the forward-thinking, economically focused type of leadership that we need in the Commonwealth of Virginia that we need to both continue and to enhance. And I think that there are two very stark choices in terms of visions about the Commonwealth of Virginia in this race for lieutenant governor and in all three of our statewide races. The vision that we have is growing Virginia's economy, making sure that everyone can participate, can rise, that we are continuing to create jobs, filling the 175,000 middle-skill jobs that are going unfilled in the Commonwealth to increase incomes for our families, opportunities for our small businesses, and to drive economic growth. The other vision that we have seen is one based on divisive partisanship, personal attacks on political opponents, dragging our political process down into the mud, and that's not where we want or need to be as a Commonwealth. And I believe that Virginians will make a choice on November the 7th that they want to continue, that they want to continue to increase economic growth here in Virginia, and not that they want to go backwards and deal with divisive issues, legislative issues, and others that really hamper that economic growth. We've already seen early indications in this race that people are coming toward that vision on June the 13th. We had both a Republican and a Democratic primary. We were fortunate to have won over 250,000 votes in that primary. Senator Vogel in her primary won about 150,000 votes. So we had over 100,000 more Virginians come out to get behind our vision of economic growth and of opportunity for all. And I believe that that will continue over the next 3 months as we get to November the 7th. People want a positive, forward-thinking, economically focused politics, and that is what our campaign is all about. And I'll just say a word, if I have time, that the only reason, that, frankly, that I am able to be here with you is because of opportunity. It is because people gave my family a chance to rise, to work hard. I was raised primarily by my mom after my parents separated. I have two wonderful parents, very close to both of them. But when life happened and my mom had to start over with her four children, we moved in with my late maternal grandparents, two of the best people I have ever known. Grandfather was a World War II veteran and a postal worker for 45 years. My grandmother was a nurse for 40 years. They took us into their home, and that changed the entire trajectory of our lives. We didn't have a lot of money. They didn't have much that they could give to us materially, but what they did have was something I like to call spiritual wealth. They gave us hope and optimism and faith and a high-quality education. And said tomorrow can be brighter than today. And that allowed my mom, my dad, our family, with the help of strangers, our neighbors, and so many other people, to send all four of her children to college and two of us to law school, starting from that place. And today my wife and I now own a family small business in Fairfax County, Virginia, and can provide a better life for our children. We want that for absolutely everybody in the Commonwealth of Virginia. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin Fairfax. Jill Vogel, the floor is now yours for your opening remarks.
Thank you. Good afternoon. It's great to be with all of you. A special thanks to our moderator, to those who have put on this debate, and it's an honor to be here to debate you, Justin.
Thank you.
And I just have to recognize my husband and my two children are here. They don't often get to come to debates. My five-year-old Olivia and my eight-year-old Taz. So hopefully they'll be quiet in the corner. I just wanted to take a minute or two to tell you about myself. I'm a mom. I'm a small business owner. I was born and raised in the Shenandoah Valley. When I was growing up, my dad was in the apple business. He managed an orchard, and so my first job ever was picking apples. I graduated from Central High School and then went on to William & Mary and then to law school. And I have been very, very fortunate to have opportunities and positions at the highest level of law and government and policy, including being Deputy General Counsel at the Department of Energy, where I got to work on regulatory issues, compliance issues, work with the EPA and other agencies. And after I left there, I had the chance to go and work at a big, big firm. And I decided that I would do what others in my family had done and start my own business. And so I'm very proud to say that the law firm that I started is now nationally recognized for the work that we do in nonprofits and charities and trade associations. And after having sort of gotten all that together, as if I were not busy enough, the Senate seat in the community where I live became open. And I had lots of people talk about it and recruit me to run. And I said, you know what? I can absolutely do this. I care about the Commonwealth of Virginia. We have so many issues that need to be resolved. So for the last 10 years, I have served in the Senate of Virginia. And I have worked on every issue that you can think of, from healthcare, expanding access, and making it more affordable, to fighting for children who have autism and their families and making healthcare more affordable for them. I fought domestic violence. I've been an advocate for women's health, for children. I banned child marriage in Virginia. I've been an advocate for reform of our tax code, reform of our criminal code. I have fought for the environment, and I have fought to protect agriculture, which is Virginia's biggest industry. And so I stand here before you today as somebody who has that experience and as well as worked on the budget. I neglected to mention that. I'm on the Finance Committee, and I chair the Finance Subcommittee that is in charge of all of the state's employees, all of our technology, public safety. And one of the things that's been really important is trying to manage Virginia well with the finite amount of resources that we have. And one of the things I was proud to do this most recent Senate session was help address the compensation crisis in Virginia for our state police and our sheriffs and sheriff's deputies, considering that some sheriff deputies are actually on food stamps in the Commonwealth of Virginia. We were able to do that without raising taxes. And so I tell you all that to tell you that experience matters. I have spent so much of my time and effort and energy focused on making Virginia a well-managed state, on constituent service, and most of all, fixing things. And I don't want to fight about it. I would just like to fix them. And I have had an extraordinary opportunity to work with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle, to work together in a Senate that is 21 Republican, 19 Democrats. And you cannot get anything done unless you can work with everybody. And I will work with anybody who will work with me. And so I say that committed as your next Lieutenant Governor, if I am so fortunate, to govern with principle over party, always considering what's in the best interest of all Virginians. And I am never afraid to break with my party when it's the right thing to do. And I have done that on many, many issues, from introducing legislation on redistricting reform, to being one of only two people in my party to vote against uranium, to support ethics reform in Virginia when that has raised some controversy, in supporting non-discrimination for our LGBTQ community in Virginia. And also, when the governor of my party introduced a budget that actually borrowed money from the VRS to help zero out the budget, I voted against that as a matter of principle. So I would just tell you also, medical marijuana. I have voted to loosen our rules on marijuana to make it more accessible for those people who are sick and need medical marijuana. So my point is, I am committed to doing what's right no matter what. And what real people in Virginia want is to strip all that hyperpartisan rhetoric out, because the most important thing that I think we all should remember is the issues that matter in the Commonwealth of Virginia are not partisan issues at all. They're often issues of region, and it's a vote of conscience and a vote of principle. So I am committed to you that I will vote to keep government out of your life, out of your business, out of the regulatory environment, out of your bedroom, because that's what people want, less government, lower taxes. And I am committed that that's how I will govern, and I would love to have your support in this Lieutenant Governor's race. Thank you again.
Thank you, Jill Vogel. As I mentioned, each candidate will have up to 2 minutes to respond initially to a question, plus an additional 1 minute if they wish a rebuttal. We have a timekeeper sitting in the first row who will show a yellow light with 30 seconds remaining in each of the answers, and a red light when it's time to stop. They also have a bell. Can we hear the bell?
He played it for me before.
If you hear that sound, please wrap up the sentence that you're on. We'll go on to the next.
I don't think we'll miss that, will we, Justin?
The first question now is for Justin Fairfax. What steps should Virginia take in the next 4 years to combat the harmful effects of climate change and rising sea levels?
Yes, well, climate change is an existential threat to the Commonwealth of Virginia and also to the country. It's something we have to take very seriously. The Lieutenant Governor of Virginia sits on the Governor's Climate Change and Resiliency Update Commission, and there are a number of leaders of all parties who are coming together to focus on making sure that Virginia is resilient, particularly Hampton Roads, which is the second most vulnerable geographic area in the nation to the effects of climate change and sea level rise. So we just got a grant, federal grant, that Senators Mark Warner and Tim Kaine announced to work on resiliency efforts in Hampton Roads. We should continue to work with our partners in the military. Norfolk Naval Base, of course, is the largest naval base in the world, with our economic partners and with the public sector to find ways to reduce, you know, our carbon emissions and footprint. Governor McAuliffe has started some initiatives to reduce the carbon emissions the state government level. And so we've got to, you know, both be looking at clean energy and renewable sources of energy as part of the mix of energy powering the Commonwealth of Virginia. But again, we cannot take our eye off the ball. What we do today is going to have effects 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now. And we're already experiencing, particularly in Hampton Roads, but in other places, the real world effects of climate change, of sea level rise. If you've traveled there, if you get a relatively modest rain, you will have streets flooding, which both impacts our economy. Businesses have had to close, schools have had to close as well. And so, again, we have to be very thoughtful about how we go about making our Commonwealth more resilient, reducing our carbon emissions overall. And also, again, working in a bipartisan fashion to make sure that we deal with this very critical threat.
Thank you, Justin Fairfax. Thank you. Jill Vogel, same question, up to 2 minutes response.
Thank you. So for sure, climate change is real. We know what the science tells us. And it certainly has an enormous impact on the Commonwealth of Virginia in a lot of ways. And chief among them is what you mentioned, and that is sea level rise. And in the time that I have been in the legislature, I have worked with a lot of people who are very, very engaged on the subject in an effort to try to direct more resources to something that frankly has not gotten the attention that it deserves. Sea level rise in the Commonwealth of Virginia is not just an issue for our communities, but it's also a national security issue. It has an enormous impact on our military. And I have met with representatives from the military to try to have discussions about what we can do in partnership. It is critical that we make this a priority and make certain that we are directing the resources that we can to the communities that need it most, to address changes that are going to be necessary in infrastructure, and support those communities now before it is too late. And it's a planning issue. And I know that there are some communities that are working closely together, but I don't believe that we have gone far enough in terms of educating some of our colleagues together over what our priorities need to be.
Thank you, Jill Bogle. Justin Fairfax, do you wish a rebuttal, an extra minute?
No, not in this case.
Okay, thank you. The second question, I think we start with Jill first. That is, legal experts agree that it will take a constitutional amendment to end the practice of political gerrymandering in Virginia. Will you vote for a constitutional amendment that prohibits political gerrymandering? And if yes, should a commission be included? And should the commission be a nonpartisan or bipartisan commission?
I am so grateful that you asked that question, because year after year in the Senate of Virginia, I have introduced legislation to implement redistricting reform, a constitutional amendment, a nonpartisan commission. I am willing to, frankly, work with anybody who will work with me on this issue. It's a matter of principle. It's a matter of ethics. It's simply a matter of having those who are represented in our community have confidence that they are picking their elected representatives and not the other way around. It's not my job to get to pick who votes for me. And the standards are very clear. We should work very hard to keep communities of common interest together, keep communities contiguous, and actually create an environment where people have accountability with one elected office holder, not a district divided among four or five, because it makes you a lot less able to engage and be effective if you represent seven or eight localities over, say, four. And that's what happens when you allow for gerrymandering. And I can tell you, I have worked very closely with Virginia 2021 and Brian Cannon and a number of other people around the Commonwealth of Virginia who understand that this is a priority. We will have redistricting again, obviously, after the next census. And you have my commitment, not only that I've obviously introduced the legislation over and over again, but I would absolutely vote for redistricting reform as your lieutenant governor.
Thank you, Jill Vogel. Justin Fairfax, same question.
Yes, I would support a constitutional amendment to get rid of political gerrymandering. I know that the United States Supreme Court is likely to hear a case soon on this very subject, and it'll be instructive what their ruling is. I believe we should have a nonpartisan commission that engages in redistricting. I, too, work with Brian Ross Cannon and Virginia 2021 and other people who have been engaged in helping to make our election system more fair, more open, again, making sure that voters pick their representatives and not the other way around. And I think this is one of the critical areas if we want to improve where we have been in this political gridlock that has existed, particularly in the General Assembly, over the last number of years. We have to have a system where people actually have to go out and listen, compete for votes, where you're not incentivized to fight all the time, which is what the current system does. And so I would certainly support that effort. But I think this also highlights the importance of having a lieutenant governor and a governor who can bring their caucus along with them. If I were sitting in that seat and we had a 2020 tie on this legislation, I would break it in favor of moving toward that nonpartisan commission, and also would work with a governor, Ralph Northam, who I support very strongly for governor, our Democratic nominee. He too would be moving toward making sure our elections are fairer, that our maps are redrawn in a way that does not dilute the influence that everyday Virginians and voters should be having. And so I think it's important, again, to be able to have allies in your caucus who are working with you to make sure we can actually achieve these objectives, and that's something that I would do as Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you, Justin Fairfax. Jill, do you wish an extra minute?
No, sir. I'm good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, though.
The next question, I think, goes to Justin first. Should all Virginia employers be required to check immigration status through E-Verify before hiring a worker?
Yeah, we have an E-Verify system that is in place, and I believe it is important that our employers use E-Verify to check status. But at the same time, and there's a broader discussion about immigration reform in this country, and there have been discussions even here in the Commonwealth of Virginia about a sanctuary cities bill, which I think was a political distraction from the real issues that should be focused on public safety, on making sure that we live in a Commonwealth where people are not in fear, and that we can move our economy forward and not get into the battles that some other places that have not had the economic success that Virginia has had are able to do. And so, again, we need to make sure that we have, law enforcement not be mandated to do certain things that actually distract from their mission of public safety. I'm a former federal prosecutor. I'm someone who has actually prosecuted immigration crimes, illegal reentry, and others. I've prosecuted violent crimes. I was in the Major Crimes and Narcotics Unit in the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of Virginia. And so I have worked hand in hand with our state, federal, and local law enforcement partners to keep our community safe, to be thoughtful about the way that we engage. And again, I think that what we have seen is a penchant toward people who, would want to demonize, certain people, and again, also make our law enforcement less effective by many of the mandates that they then place on them and on local government. So that is the approach that I would advocate for as Lieutenant Governor, and again, as someone who was a federal prosecutor, I understand these issues at a very deep and practical level.
Thank you, Justin Fairfax. Jill Vogel, same question.
The answer is yes. I don't know how much more I need to elaborate other than to say that I believe unequivocally in the rule of law. And if we don't like the laws as we have them now, we should change them. But we shouldn't sort of inconsistently pick and choose and apply the law somewhere and in other cases no. So yes, I do support E-Verify. And this, he mentioned sanctuary cities and other similar issues. I am not in favor of sanctuary cities in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Thank you, Jill Vogel. Justin, you wish an extra minute?
I would actually, on the sanctuary cities issue, we don't have sanctuary cities in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And that's why that bill was a political distraction. This is what, again, we have to choose between, whether or not we're gonna continue to rile up emotion and stoke fear about things that in this case don't even exist, or are we gonna get back to the core mission of promoting public safety, of growing our economy, of making sure that everyone has a chance at economic opportunity. So when you talk about partisanship, whether it's out in the open or veiled or behind the scenes, we need to go in a very different direction. Again, where we are focused on economic growth, prosperity for all, and giving everyone the chance to rise.
Thank you, Justin. Jill, extra minute?
Yeah, I'll just respond by saying, I don't think it's fair to say that these issues are political or partisan. These are issues of management. These are resource issues. These are issues related to access for Virginia students who want access to a limited amount of slots in our colleges and universities in the Commonwealth of Virginia. These are issues where I think we should all work together and try to reach agreement. And again, this notion that somehow all of this is so partisan in the legislature, while yes, there are partisan discussions, these bills are not introduced to be partisan. They're introduced to solve problems.
Thank you, Jill Vogel. Jill, you get the next question. First, Virginia is one of just six states that allows unlimited campaign contributions by individuals, corporations, unions, and other entities. What, if any, limits on campaign contributions would you favor?
Well, I can tell you that as a person who practices law in this area of ethics and advise people in all 50 states and at the federal level for what the ethics rules are, the contribution limits are, when you actually impose onerous restrictions on individual or corporate contributions, what ends up happening is you force the money out of the open and make it less transparent and less obvious. So my view is that it's your First Amendment speech right to engage. Some people want to go out and protest. Some people want to write letters to the editor. Some people want to stand up and speak. Others just wish to support the candidate of their choice quietly with their contributions. And so given where the Commonwealth of Virginia is today, and the fact that we have transparency, every single contribution is reported and disclosed, your disbursements are reported and disclosed, I don't believe that we should limit people's ability to participate.
Thank you, Jill. Justin? Up to 2 minutes, same question.
Great, thank you. So I disagree with Senator Vogel on that. I believe we should have campaign contribution limits in the Commonwealth of Virginia. We have them at the federal level. For our senators and House of Representatives, and even for people running for president. And so I believe that we should have robust disclosure, but we also should have limits. And to talk about allowing people to participate, allowing people to drown out other people's voices by unlimited, massive campaign contributions, oftentimes from a single source, that's not my view or definition of what a functioning democracy is like. So I believe, again, that in order to have more people participate, we need to start taking the money out of politics, the unlimited money, particularly the dark money as well. We need to get that out and give the voice back to everyday citizens. And so, Senator Vogel, I don't share your view on this. I think it's actually against democracy. I know you've gotten $600,000 from a single source in this election, in your primary. And to say that one person can contribute that kind of money, and in this case, it's a family member, but whomever it is, it drowns out the person who may only have a dollar or may have no money, but wants to have their voices heard about their child's autism treatment, about wanting to expand Medicaid in the Commonwealth of Virginia, about growing jobs and economic opportunity and affording college, and all the things that our families every single day live with around the kitchen table. I don't think that we should have people be able to give unlimited, massive contributions. I think that actually hurts democracy rather than helps it.
Thank you, Justin. Perfect. Jill,
yes,
you
I'll just respond for one moment and say that my position on this is honestly a position against interest, especially in this race, because historically, the huge amounts of money from single source donors have gone to the other side. It's been Soros money that's come to Virginia or Bloomberg money in giant chunks. So I'm aware of that. I get that. But I also believe that that is someone's individual speech right to express their support for whomever it is they wish to support.
Thank you, Jill Bogle. Justin, I believe the question is yours next.
Yes.
Would you support strengthening gun safety by registering, licensing, and insuring guns like we do with cars?
I think the insuring piece is something that we could take a look at, but I think we can start a step back. There are some very common sense measures that we can take that the vast majority of people in this country and in this Commonwealth agree upon to make our society safer when it comes to gun violence. 90% of Americans support universal background checks, and yet we don't have them. And that's in large part because of lobbying done by the NRA and other groups, and I know they're supporting Senator Vogel and that ticket. But again, when 90% of Americans believe that this is something that should be done, universal background checks, and that would make us safer, including the vast majority of gun owners, and we still can't get traction, that shows you another aspect of our democratic process that has broken down. So whether it's universal background checks, limiting these high capacity magazines, these are things, again, that are common sense. And as a former federal prosecutor who actually prosecuted gun violence and gun crimes, I come at this as someone who has experience. I have hunters in my family. We know many responsible gun owners, and we want them to be able to keep their firearms, but we also want to make sure, again, that we have a safer society where we are able to responsibly reduce gun violence and do, again, what 90%+ of Americans would like us to do to make us safer. So again, the insurance piece brings incentive, I think, to have people act responsibly with regard to storage of their guns and other things. But at its base, we can start where we all mostly agree around universal background checks, but that has not happened, and I would fight to make that happen.
Thank you, Justin Fairfax. Jill, same question.
So I would just be very clear about one thing. I am not running for lieutenant governor to take anybody's rights away in any category. And I have laid down a marker for fighting for our constitutional rights and fighting for the Second Amendment. And I don't believe that any more interference by government on this issue is going to solve any problems. And I can just tell you, look at the reality. Justin is from D.C., where they have the strictest gun laws almost anywhere in the country. And yet they have among the highest levels of gun violence. So I don't believe that it's actually a fair assessment that stricter gun rules or having government encroach more on your individual liberty, especially if you are a law-abiding citizen, obviously. And so the difference, well, this is a case where we differ a lot. I have stood for reciprocity. Governor McAuliffe actually walked that back when they tried to undo our reciprocity in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I'm for that. Justin is not. So it's a place where we absolutely differ, and my commitment is to not take anybody's rights away.
Thank you, Jill Bogle. Justin, I assume you want another minute?
I would like another minute. Thank you. And Jill mentioned that I did grow up in Washington, D.C. I was born in Pittsburgh, grew up in D.C., and they have had issues around gun violence as an epidemic. But what we also know is that there, and again, as a federal prosecutor, I know this. These aren't talking points, political talking points for me. There is an iron pipeline of guns. Those guns don't originate in D.C. They originate often in places with lax gun laws and lack of oversight. So if you're tracing gun violence in Chicago or in D.C. or in New York, there are studies that have been done that those guns are coming from other places with what much laxer gun laws. We used to have one gun a month in the Commonwealth of Virginia. We should have it again. It was under Governor Doug Wilder, and that was rolled back. So again, very reasonable, responsible, common sense measures that can make us safer without impinging on people's rights.
Thank you, Justin. Jill, I assume you want one more minute?
No, that's okay. I'm good.
Okay. You have the next question first, which is, do you support in-state tuition for those who are in Virginia without being legal citizens?
No, sir, I do not. And there's a very simple reason for that. While I would love to be in a position for us to do everything we can to educate every child, but there are limits. And one of those limits is we have a finite number of college slots available in the Commonwealth of Virginia. It is unbelievably competitive, and the cost of higher ed has gone up 74% in the last 10 years. And so I believe, no, those slots should be saved for students who are legally here in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Thank you, Jill Vogel. Justin Fairfax, same question.
Yeah, I believe under DACA that those slots should be made available to young people, many of whom were born here, and brought to this country without any say-so. Not their fault that they were brought to this country by their families, and many of them know no other country other than the United States of America and no other state other than the Commonwealth of Virginia. Many of them go to our public schools, our elementary schools, our middle schools, our high schools, and there's something called DACA, D-A-C-A, Deferred Access for Childhood Arrivals, and this was a policy of the President Obama's administration, and for young people who qualified under DACA, they were given in-state tuition, thanks to our Attorney General Mark Herring, who did the analysis and said that they are eligible for in-state tuition under DACA. So again, this is another area where we want to make sure that more people get opportunity, and we're particularly talking about young people, again, many of whom had no say-so, and whether or not they were brought to this country. And so we want to make sure that they have opportunity, that they have hope. Many of them go on to serve in the military, to start small businesses, to start families, to help grow our economy. And so we want to make sure that that opportunity is available to them as well.
Thank you, Justin. Jill, 1 minute.
I would just respond by saying I understand the complexity of the situation and I understand the challenges, but I also understand how incredibly competitive it is, and it is my obligation to look out for the citizens of the Commonwealth of Virginia that I represent who are legally here, who are desperate for access to our colleges and universities. It is already incredibly difficult, and it's not affordable, and it's not that accessible, and it's becoming increasingly less so. So my obligation is first to the citizens of the Commonwealth of Virginia who are here legally.
Thank you, Jill. Justin, one more minute?
No, not on that.
Okay, you get the first crack at the next question. Right. That is, what do you think of the current composite index and its effects on funding levels for suburban schools across Virginia?
Yes, and the CPI, the composite index, is something I think we have to take a look at. By its very nature, it takes into account localities and local conditions for schools and also local economies and how the schools are funded. I think that it has had some adverse impacts, the way the formula has been done for certain, not only suburban school jurisdictions, but also in some rural areas, some urban areas as well. So we need to be thoughtful about the way that we help from the state level to give additional funds to our local schools. I sat on the Minority Student Achievement Oversight Committee of the Fairfax County Public Schools, where we live in Fairfax County, and there are some great aspects that our public schools are pursuing to educate a very diverse and growing population of young people, but there also are resource challenges. We've tried to find ways to raise additional streams of revenue, not only in Fairfax, but really around the Commonwealth of Virginia, and we have to continue to support our schools. These good public schools and good schools overall are drivers of our economy. We have to fund those schools to make sure that our localities are attractive to businesses that want to locate here in the Commonwealth of Virginia or expand, to make sure, again, that our families are getting more opportunity, that our young people, no matter where they start, even if their family doesn't have much money, that they too can rise through a high-quality education and hard work. And so I think we have to examine the CPI to make sure that jurisdictions are not being unduly burdened and underfunded, but we also have to have a rock-solid commitment to funding our public schools, to paying our teachers what they're worth. We pay $7,000 less than the national average, and to having conditions in our schools that are conducive to growth, which ultimately leads to economic opportunity and growth.
Thank you, Justin. Jill, same question.
So the students in the Commonwealth of Virginia, in my view, are entitled to a world-class education where everybody, where every school system is funded fairly and funded equally. And I have actually introduced legislation numerous times to address the composite index, which is the index by which you actually determine the amounts of resources that are going to, that will go to individual localities to fund SOQs. So here is the issue. We desperately need, like so many other issues in the Commonwealth of Virginia, to catch up. We are, whether it's our tax code or our regulatory environment, it has been many, many, many years since we have gone back in and made efforts to modernize or streamline or make more efficient, because certainly things have changed over time, the mechanisms with which we manage these resources. I cannot think of a more critical place than education in K-12. And what the composite index has done, unfortunately, in many cases, is pit those communities where they have invested in protecting open space, and conservation, pit conservation against public education. Because the way the composite index actually works is that you combine the value of the land in your district and you actually aggregate that amount, and that is what is part of how they calculate how much money you're going to get. And for communities that put lots and lots of land in land use, it means that land can't be developed, and so it artificially lowers the value of that land by an enormous amount. So what ends up happening is those localities get less money. And so when Governor Tim Kaine was governor, we all were pleading, especially in the districts that I represent, to please freeze the index so we can actually do something. He did. But we've never actually gone back and addressed the necessary modernization and recalibration of how we do the composite index.
Thank you, Jill. Justin, 1 minute?
No.
Okay, I believe the next question goes to Jill first. Easy, simple question. Do you support a carbon tax?
No.
Justin?
Not isolated. I think it's got to be part of a broader discussion, again, both about carbon emission reduction, but also moving toward more clean energy alternatives and renewables. So not in a vacuum, but I think if it's part of a comprehensive strategy, it's something that we could take a look at.
Jill, do you wish 1 minute?
Well, I'll just say that in my time in the legislature, I've been very focused on the environment, on clean air and clean water. And certainly being a pro-business person is not mutually exclusive from focusing on those issues. But I will tell you, I think the carbon tax would be a great detriment to the Commonwealth of Virginia and the industries that are here, because here's the problem. Carbon emissions do not observe any arbitrary geographic boundary. And so what I would like to do is incentivize people to make good decisions. I was really proud, actually, to have been in several years in my service in the legislature. I had a 100% score with the League of Conservation Voters for taking positions that absolutely protect the environment. But at the same time, in that same year, I had a 100% score by the Northern Virginia Chamber of Commerce. So you can do both well, and it's just a balance. And in this case, I think that would put us far out of balance.
Thank you, Jill. Justin?
I would just say I'm proud to be endorsed by the League of Conservation Voters in this election.
Thank you. Yield my time. Jill, I believe you have the next question. Would you support raising revenue? We're the eighth wealthiest, this questioner says, state in the union, and 43rd in revenue. We have poorly paid teachers and need better services.
So the question is, would I support raising taxes?
And it says, would you support raising revenue?
Well, I'll take all the revenue we can get. But I won't raise taxes to do it. It's a function of priorities, and I serve on the Finance Committee, as I mentioned before, and it's always a question of balance and balancing the interests and balancing the needs. We have a $110 billion a year budget. Some of that is a pass-through from the federal government, but it's really a function of priorities. And I know what my biggest priorities are. And again, it's not a partisan discussion ever. It's about making Virginia a well-managed state, investing in infrastructure, investing in our port. 1 in 10 jobs is tied to our port. We want to have world-class schools. We want to have world-class colleges and universities. But I don't believe that right now the right thing to do is raise taxes. And here's why. If you consider where Virginia has been before and where we are now, it is a shocking contrast. Virginia used to be the best place to raise a child, best place to be an entrepreneur, best place to start a business, and best tax climate. We're now ranked 33rd in the nation in terms of tax climate, and we have people leaving Virginia more for the first time ever since we've been counting. More people are leaving Virginia than coming to Virginia. Imagine what that does to our economy and what that does to our ability to raise more revenue. And it's because our tax climate is, I think we're taxing people too much. I introduced legislation this year that would have actually allowed us to do what North Carolina is doing to our South. And they are kicking us in the rear end in all these other states. We have a worse tax climate than West Virginia, North Carolina, and Tennessee. And what my bill would have done is actually taken surpluses and applied that to buy down the tax rate for businesses. And that would be an extraordinary benefit to the Commonwealth of Virginia. And I think it would incentivize people to come to Virginia. So the answer is no, I don't support raising taxes. I actually support tax reform. It's been since 1972. That we've gone back and adjusted any of our taxes or our tax brackets.
Thank you, Jill. Justin, same question.
Yeah, I think we need to have a balanced approach to our budgeting keeps all options on the table. And I think back, Senator Vogel just mentioned we need to invest in infrastructure. Well, we had a critical opportunity to do just that in 2013 with the transportation bill. This was a bipartisan bill with a Republican governor, Bob McDonnell, a General Assembly that was led by Republicans. And that bill was passed and signed by the governor, but Senator Vogel voted no on that transportation bill. This was called a game changer for Virginia's economy because it, for the first time in roughly 27 years, put serious infrastructure investment into our roads and our bridges. You mentioned the ports. Unlocking the ports has been one of the byproducts of that investment in transportation. And so we can't just simply have someone who says one thing and then does another. There's a lot of that. You can say you're for infrastructure investment, but when you had the chance to do it, you did not do it. And again, this is a bipartisan bill that came out of the Senate. I believe got 26 votes from senators, but one of those 26 was not Senator Vogel. So we need to be smart about the way that we do our budgeting, the way we invest. And that bill, by the way, did raise revenue. It did raise certain taxes. But again, it was called an economic game changer. If any of you have been on 64, 66, 395, 460, 81, 29 coming down here to Charlottesville, you know that we desperately needed to invest in our infrastructure, and we still need to make additional investments in our infrastructure. And Governor McAuliffe and Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam and others are focused on doing that. So again, it's not enough to simply say, I support infrastructure and not make these critical investments at the critical time. I'll also say this, Senator Vogel, I know, has taken a pledge with the Americans for Tax Reform, that she will never, ever raise taxes. Well, I'm not going to make that kind of pledge to an outside group that doesn't have the best interest of Virginians at heart. We need to make decisions that are best for Virginia, for our economy, and for our families. And that is my pledge to the voters of Virginia.
Thank you, Justin. Joe, 1 minute.
Just on the bill that he's referencing, the transportation bill. I worked very, very closely with the architects of that bill. I served then on the Finance Committee, and I voted on that bill multiple times, out of committee, out of subcommittee. But here's the deal. As I mentioned before, I am not afraid to break with my party when it is a matter of principle. And even today, Governor Bob McDonnell will tell you that it had far more taxes in it than he wanted or that he even realized. And so from my perspective, you can be a good fiscal manager of the Commonwealth of Virginia. It doesn't have to be a partisan discussion. It's a discussion of how do you allocate your resources. And I don't know a single time since I've been in the Senate that someone has come to me and said, please raise my taxes. We have a $110 billion budget, and we have the resources to direct towards transportation. The issue with that bill was we didn't have smart scale. We still had the politics in all of those decisions about how we fund transportation. Smart scale now says, and this wasn't passed until much later, that you have to have priorities where you spend money where it's most needed.
Thank you, Jill. Justin, 1 minute.
I'll take that minute, yes. So again, this comes down to leadership, to vision and priorities. That was a bill that you either had to vote no or yes on. And 26 senators voted yes, and Senator Vogel voted no. Governor McDonnell signed that bill into law. And you mentioned that we now have money for infrastructure investment. Well, that's because people took leadership and supported that bill when it mattered. So it put $6 billion of additional investment and more investment over time. So that is the kind of vision that we have to have, again, focused on driving economic growth, not on bumper stickers or sloganeering or pledges to outside groups that aren't accountable to the Commonwealth of Virginia. We are accountable to the voters, whether it's families that are trying to get to a ball game or folks who are trying to move goods and services from the port, small businesses that are trying to start up but are 3 hours of congestion. The Silver Line, which was part of that bill, in Northern Virginia. There has been tremendous development along that Silver Line corridor. Had that bill failed, we wouldn't have that. So again, we have to have a broader vision, and that's what I would bring to Lieutenant Governorship.
Thank you, Justin. You also get the next question. First, does the public have the right to know the names of police officers involved in shootings?
I believe that they do, but I think we also have to be responsible in the way that that information is put forward. Police officers, and again, as a former federal prosecutor, I have worked closely hand in hand with our law enforcement at the federal, state, and local level. I have worked with officers and agents who have gone out and executed search warrants in very dangerous situations, some of whom have actually gotten into shootouts themselves in trying to conduct and carry out their duties. So I am someone who actually comes from a law enforcement family. My oldest brother is also a former federal prosecutor. My father-in-law is a deputy sheriff a long time in Arlington County, as is my wife's uncle. And so again, I understand these issues not in a purely political sense. I understand them as a practical matter. When you talk about officer involved shootings, this is an issue obviously that's top of consciousness for many people. I think that we have to balance the need to protect the safety of our law enforcement, which I hold to be paramount, with the public's right to know, including people involved in these shootings themselves. Oftentimes in civil discovery, when it comes to that, and cases are filed, this information ultimately comes out, but we have to maintain the public trust. We have to maintain transparency. It's something as a federal prosecutor that I had to balance all the time. There were very sensitive issues. But at the end of the day, oftentimes I had to come into a public courtroom in federal court in front of a judge, oftentimes in front of media and the public and families, and talk about issues that the public had a right to know. So I think we need to balance those, and as a former federal prosecutor, I understand how best to do that.
Thank you, Justin. Jill, same question, 2 minutes.
So I've worked very, very closely with law enforcement all the time that I've been in the legislature. And this is a very, very important issue to those people who risk their lives every day to protect the Commonwealth of Virginia. And they never know what the next great issue is going to be for them or what's around the next corner. And so we've talked about this a lot, and I agree that in every case, it is a balance. And in this context, I think you have to balance the interest in protecting the lives and the privacy in the course of this discussion or discovery, you have to place a priority of that over, at least in the short term, the public's right to know, because it does pose such an enormous risk to those people who are in law enforcement. And let me say this, we have a very hard time in the Commonwealth of Virginia, both recruiting and keeping people in law enforcement, in the state police, in our sheriff's offices, and as deputy sheriffs. And I mentioned earlier, we pay some of our deputies so little that I know there was a deputy in Essex County that I was talking to. He actually qualified for a house from Habitat for Humanity. We have sheriff's deputies in the past who've been on food stamps. We place so many onerous burdens on those people who protect us every day, and this is our one opportunity to protect them.
Thank you, Jill. One more minute.
You know, I'll take 20 seconds, and actually I think it's always helpful we could have a point of agreement. I agree with Senator Vogel that we do need to pay our sheriff's deputies more. We also need to pay our Virginia State Police more, and I know that there was some funds that were included in the budget to do just that. We need to make sure our law enforcement, that they too have economic security as well, as they conduct a very dangerous job. As I mentioned, my father-in-law is a longtime deputy sheriff in Arlington, so he's actually one of these deputies. This is in my family. This is not theoretical for me, and so I think that we can strike that proper balance, and I'm someone who would continue to do that.
Thank you, Justin. Jill, you wish the last minute?
No, that's okay.
You are then first on the next question, which is, how would you support career and technical education? Recent support has increased. How would you continue and increase this support for career and technical education in our public schools?
Well, first, I think we need to loosen some of the restrictions in the classroom that have been prohibitive of K-12, of high schools working with local community colleges or colleges. That's number one. Number two is I think we can just invest more in career and technical training. What we have is a system now that is pushing everybody towards four-year colleges, and that doesn't work for everybody. In Hampton Roads, there are 10,000 welding jobs right now that are available, and they're unfilled. So imagine what that would mean to the Commonwealth of Virginia if you actually tried to engage, one, the private sector in part of that discussion and expanding career and technical education, and also putting more priority and resources into career and technical education that comes from our budget. And I can tell you a perfect example of something that happened in my district when we had this exact issue come up, and we've had issues come up where people either because of a regulation couldn't have the teacher certified in order to do the dual enrollment, which really matters in Virginia, gets people more skills and more technical education and actually gets them on their way, sometimes with more credits. But in my district, we had Lord Fairfax Community College, and they were graduating lots of people, but they didn't get jobs. And we also had a company called Valley Protein that had a lot of jobs that they could not fill. And they sat down together and they worked out a curriculum, a great public-private partnership, that company said, hey, we'll be willing to help write the curriculum. We need CDL drivers. We need people to fill all of these jobs. And they did. And they worked very, very closely together and created an opportunity for people to come out matched well with the skills that were necessary for very high-paying jobs. So it's a skills gap question and a modest investment on the front end of our state resources to expand career and technical education would pay off in enormous dividends later.
Thank you, Jill. Justin, same question.
Yes, absolutely. We absolutely must invest in getting people trained and certified to take one of the 175,000 middle skill jobs that are open today in the Commonwealth of Virginia. These are not jobs that we need to create. These are jobs that exist. But there is a gap between what employers require in terms of those skills and certification and what our workforce has. So there are several ways that we can attack this. And this has been a centerpiece, by the way, of our campaign, that message of helping to grow our economy, to grow economic opportunity for everyone. And we're here, fittingly, right here at Piedmont Virginia Community College, a place where many people come to try to get that training and that certification to move up the economic ladder. And so what we've got to do is to make the training and certification more affordable. Governor McAuliffe and Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam have actually been champions on the score in reducing the cost for people who want to get that certification. They've made investments in the budget, and there are more still that we can make. Lieutenant Governor Northam has what's called the G3 program, get skills, get a job, and give back, that makes those certification and training opportunities available to more people. And enhances public service here in the Commonwealth of Virginia in the process. So we have got to create a bridge for people to access these opportunities. We also have to, as we remodel our curriculum in our high schools and in our middle schools, and the late, great Senator John Miller from Newport News, from Hampton Roads, was a champion for redesigning our curriculum to better match what children are learning with the job skills that they will need when they come out so that they can take these jobs which pay on average between $30,000 and $50,000 a year. A far cry from the $14,500 a year that you make at Virginia's minimum wage of $7.25 an hour. So again, to drive economic growth, to make sure our businesses have the skilled labor they need, and every Virginian has an opportunity to rise, we need to continue to make these investments.
Thank you, Justin. Jill, do you wish a minute?
No, I'm good.
Thank you. You get the first crack at it, and that is...
This must be a good one.
Well, there are two. And this, they're both kind of tough. What is your position on the conscience exemption from childhood immunizations?
I believe that it should be 100% up, left to the parent to make their decision about how they want to raise their child and how they want to treat them medically. And so I believe that a conscience exemption is okay.
Justin?
I believe that our children should be immunized consistent with health standards. We know the long medical history and the medical record shows the effectiveness of vaccines and immunizations, and you know, particularly in our schools and in our public spaces. If we have a small number of children who are not immunized around others who may be, you still have a challenge where you can see diseases spread. We have eradicated so many diseases in our country and in our world that used to be very prevalent, like polio and other things that virtually are non-existent. And so we need to continue to work with the science, with the medical community, and again, to make sure that public safety and public health are paramount. And so I'm someone who believes that if you're sending your kid to public school, if you're engaging in public activities, we need to have a healthy population of young people, but also who are immunized so that we don't have the spread of disease unwittingly.
Thank you, Justin. Jill, do you wish a minute?
Yeah, I just respond from it and say I'm impressed that this question came up because it doesn't come up very often, but it is something that I have worked with extensively with families in my district. And while it is absolutely critical to be concerned about public health and what diseases we may expose children to, it is a balance. And there are occasions where children are immunosuppressed, they have unique issues, and their parents choose not to vaccinate them, and that should be their right.
Thank you, Jill. Justin, I believe you are the first responder to the next question. Are there any environmental regulations in Virginia that you think should be eliminated?
I think that, obviously we have a number and they're across different industries, whether you're talking about agriculture or forestry, and I've met with people, in those industries, also in the Chesapeake Bay. You have a number of different industries and business interests who really engage in very different types of engagement in our environmental purview. And so if you look at aquaculture, for instance, you look at agriculture, you look at those who are oyster fishermen or longshore fishermen, there are sometimes regulations that where we are aimed at cleaning up the Chesapeake Bay, where we rightfully should be, that may impose a slightly harsher burden on a particular industry rather than another. And so I think we have to look very carefully about, how we deal with those regulations. But I wouldn't, do a wholesale rollback because in many of these cases, these regulations are geared toward creating a cleaner environment while balancing and making sure that we can continue to have economic growth, that our small businesses, particularly our small agribusinesses, can continue to grow without unnecessary burdens. But we have seen the Chesapeake Bay come back from a very dark time where you had algae blooms and declining oyster and crab populations. And because of some of the regulations that we put into place, some of the incentives we've given to the private sector to stop certain runoff, Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam, when he was in the Senate, he championed a measure to take phosphorus out of fertilizer for home use. And that helped stop some of the runoff into the Chesapeake Bay, which again has helped increase the health and safety of the bay. So again, I think we have to look at it on a case-by-case basis, but also be very thoughtful about the goals we're trying to achieve, both sustaining and being a good steward of our environment while also allowing an opportunity for economic growth across the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Thank you, Justin. Jill?
So the answer is yes. We have regulations that are antiquated, that are out of date, that are onerous, that are costly, that are no longer actually consistent with how we do business in the Commonwealth of Virginia, whether it impacts agriculture, aquaculture, business. In fact, I introduced legislation this year affecting aquaculture. So it's an important balance. I place a high priority on protecting the environment in the Commonwealth of Virginia, but we have 133,000 separate regulations in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and they just get piled on top of each other and on top of each other, and they're well-meaning, but they are cumulative, and the cumulative effect is sometimes very, very detrimental. I met with representatives of the Farm Bureau this morning, and we were talking about agriculture is the number one industry in the Commonwealth of Virginia. It's $91 billion a year. It's a major export. We need to do things like actually open up the markets in Southwest Virginia where they need investment for specialty agriculture. But we have regulations that prevent you from selling something from your farm. It's your farm. Specialty agriculture is among the most lucrative areas of agriculture that exists. And we have real artificial barriers to entry into those markets that we absolutely need to address and roll back.
Thank you, Jill. Justin, 1 minute?
No, it's fine.
Okay, the next question, I believe, is for Jill first. Thomas Jefferson was governor of Virginia when it was a slave state. He enforced slave laws. Should statues of Jefferson be removed from any state property?
Here's the deal. We need to teach history and not erase history. The reality is that the Commonwealth of Virginia is a repository for some of the most rich historic monuments, battlefields, colleges and universities that themselves are historic. And so in this current environment where resources are very scarce in our budget, and as somebody who has fought year in and year out for more money for historic preservation, more money for our battlefields, more money to protect some of the things that are really important. A school, for example, that was 100 years old in my district that was really historic. To spend taxpayer money to take down monuments or remove history when we need that money actually for more historic preservation, to me, is actually a tragedy. And my opponent has said that some of the monuments around the Commonwealth of Virginia are psychologically damaging and are a celebration of slavery. And nobody would want to celebrate something that was such a dark time in our nation's history, but you cannot erase it. You cannot erase it. I mean, Thomas Jefferson founded the University of Virginia. What would you have us do about the University of Virginia? I will tell you that my great-great-grandfather, Jacob Neff, fought in the Civil War. He fought during the entire Civil War and fought in the Battle of Newmarket. And my father's grandfather had passed down through the family Jacob Neff's two sabers and his pistol. And so that was a piece of history. And my dad, understanding all the sensitivities and understanding what the Civil War meant, didn't say, I'm going to destroy this because it somehow is offensive. He actually gave it to the Newmarket Battlefield, and it's there on display today, so that people can come, my children and the next generations of children can learn about our history. It's also a big issue. We have thousands of people that visit the Commonwealth of Virginia, Jamestown, Williamsburg, to see our history.
Thank you, Jill Bogle. Justin Fairfax, same question.
Yes. Well, I'll talk about your specific question and really broaden it out, because I think that's really what we're focused on. Thomas Jefferson obviously did tremendous and wonderful things here for Virginia. And so it's very, a legacy of leadership there. He lived in a time where slavery existed. And so it's complicated in that respect. I don't think we should do anything about his statues, but those aren't the ones that we're focused on. Those aren't the ones at the center of controversy. And we're talking about, in many cases, Confederate monuments. And Senator Vogel mentioned that I said that these were psychologically harmful. And I guess just dismissed that because I guess you don't think that they are to anyone. But there are different histories and different lived experiences with these monuments. So you can't simply say because it doesn't affect you, it doesn't affect anybody else. It looks at a very divisive and divided time in the history of the Commonwealth of Virginia. I believe that localities are doing a thoughtful job about how they are going to handle monuments in their particular jurisdictions, as it should be. In Charlottesville, there is a current debate, and the city council has weighed in on it. In Richmond, they have chosen to take a different tack to contextualize some of the monuments, but I believe this is a discussion that needs to happen, that is ongoing. We know that something needs to be done. And it's not about not teaching history. When you talk about these Confederate monuments, these were put up at specific times for specific reasons. They didn't pop up out of the ground when America was founded. They were put there for specific reasons, and so these do affect different people in different ways. And so I think you can't just be dismissive and say because you know it doesn't psychologically harm or affect you or a particular community, it doesn't affect anyone. And so we need to continue to be thoughtful about this. But you can also teach history without having a Confederate statue right in the middle of the city square. Those two things are not incompatible.
Thank you, Justin. Jill, one minute, and do you think localities should have the option of removing monuments?
I don't believe that any locality should spend a penny of taxpayer dollars to destroy or erase historic monuments. They were monuments there to a historical location. Like, I can think about the town of Mount Jackson, which is right where I grew up. There was a Civil War hospital there. And right across the road is a very important marker that people stop and read every day that describe the history of what happened in the valley. People need to know about that. I don't think erasing it or taking it away is actually helpful at all. There was a military hospital right there in town where my dad's office is today. There was a turntable where all the trains brought the wounded from the north down to the south. It tells an extraordinary history of the valley, of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Virginia's history is the nation's history. And you absolutely cannot erase it.
Thank you, Jill. Justin, 1 minute, and do you think it should be strictly a local option?
I think localities should have the option to remove. I don't think we should force or mandate and tell localities what they should do, but also we should not take options away from localities with an edict from Richmond. But again, we are talking specifically about Confederate monuments. We're not talking about markers and things. That's not what the controversy has been about. And we need to be sensitive to everyone who is engaged in this discussion. My five greats ago grandmother, you mentioned I grew up in DC, but actually my family has its roots here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. My five greats ago grandmother is buried in a plot in Reston, Virginia, in Fairfax County. We have a very different history and a very different lineage and different lived experiences when you talk about things like slavery, Jim Crow, and the Civil War. And so again, it needs to synthesize and take into account what everyone's experience is and not just be dismissive of one because it doesn't affect another.
Thank you, Justin.
Can I just say one thing? I may not have answered the question because I answered it, but I didn't answer your specific question, which was, should localities be able to do it? And I just want to be clear that my answer would be no.
Right.
And I would be yes.
Justin, I believe you're first with the next question. It is, most Americans, the questioner says, are sick of the two major parties. When did you go against your party in something that mattered?
Well, it's a great question. As you know, Bob, I have been a lifelong Democrat. When I ran for office 4 years ago, it wasn't because I felt as though I was entitled to a position or was entitled because of my working my way through. I have been a Democrat and have held Democratic values, but not everybody was happy that I got involved and elected public office. But I think what we've done is gone out and shown a positive vision, again, for economic growth, for economic opportunity. And so we took our bumps and bruises as I got involved in the political process here in Virginia, but now we are incredibly unified and moving forward with that positive economic growth vision. So I am someone who certainly will work across the aisle, but I also at my core believe in those democratic values that no matter where you start, how much money your family has or doesn't have, the color of your skin, who you love, your gender expression, identity, where you were born, that you get a shot at the American dream. I think that's what we fight for as Democrats. And so, again, there will always be instances where you go back and forth, with your particular political party, but I'm gonna stand on principle and on values moving forward as we always have. And I'll just say one thing, and Senator Vogel said this earlier, I don't think we got a chance to really talk about this. Again, this is a version of saying something and doing another. Senator Vogel said that she wants to take government out of everyone's life. I don't want to have any other, intrusion into someone's life by government taken completely out. Well, again, Senator Vogel, as you know, sponsored the invasive ultrasound bill that forces women to have mandatory ultrasounds, and this would have forced them to have invasive ultrasounds. I can't think of a more intrusive thing that a government can do. And so, again, it's one thing to say these things in political ads and on stage and in mailers and other ads, but it's another thing to actually do them and to lead. And that, by the way, made Virginia a laughingstock in that with that legislation. We were in the late night television shows. That's not the kind of leadership that we need going forward.
Thank you, Justin Fairfax. Jill, I think the question has changed for you. You've already answered the question that was asked in your opening statement.
What was the, go back to the first question again. Oh, what was the difference between you and your party?
Well, right.
he didn't cite one, but if you would just allow me 1 minute before I get to the second piece of his point, and that is to say, if you ask me how many times have I put principle over party, my response to you would be, how much time do you have? I think I am desperate, as I believe all Virginians are, for people who are independent-minded, independent, open-minded, and who will put the best interests of Virginians first. So whether it was voting against uranium mining or being a hardcore advocate for redistricting reform or ethics reform or banning child marriage, taking votes against, you know, my governor's budget, those were really important things to stand for. So absolutely, I hope that we will all look to elect people, especially someone in the lieutenant governor position, who is open-minded and will work across the aisle. If I may respond to his second piece with a...
Yes, you have another minute for that.
Okay. So he mentioned something, and the attacks that he just levied against me on that bill are 100% false, and he knows that. He serves on the board of Planned Parenthood of Metropolitan Washington, D.C., and I can assure you that there was nothing in that bill that took any rights away from women or forced them to do anything against their will. It was simply an informed consent bill. But all the partisan rhetoric around this issue was so offensive, and frankly, so offensive to me, I withdrew the bill. It was clearly not a helpful discussion once it became mocked and became a tool of partisanship. Women's health issues should never be played that way. And I have been a hardcore advocate for women and women's health. And I will never apologize for that. But I will tell you, the attacks and the description of that is just false.
Thank you, Jill Vogel. Justin, 1 minute.
Where to start? First of all, again, this is about saying one thing and doing another. And I am proudly the vice chair of Planned Parenthood Metropolitan Washington Action Fund. Proud of that organization, the work that it does to protect women's health and their safety. But again, Senator Vogel will say one thing and do another, and you can't really spin this because facts are not attacks. When we talk about facts, what your bill would have done was, first of all, to force women to have an ultrasound, and then the question is, what kind of ultrasound? And as then-Senator Ralph Northam told you on the Senate floor, there is videotape of this exchange, that would have required certain women, depending upon where they were in their pregnancy, to have an invasive ultrasound forced by the state. So you can say that you don't want government to intrude in their lives and take them out of their lives, but it's what you do that matters. And so those are facts, they are not attacks, and we're talking about your record. We, you know, have heard a lot of things about personal attacks that are levied. We are talking about public record and public policy.
Jill, I'm guessing.
Yes, if I may. Justin has never spent any time around the legislature. He has not participated in the legislative process. He is not aware, I am confident, of many of the issues around, surrounding women's health related to this specific bill or the discussion of this bill. But I will tell you this, he does know the facts, and it is true. The facts speak volumes about this. Planned Parenthood, at the time, said that they would never, ever perform an abortion without first doing an ultrasound. It was required. You have to do an ultrasound to determine gestational age, to determine what kind of procedure you will have, whether it's surgical or chemical. So I can promise you that if you're talking about the facts, I am correct on the facts, and I am correct on principle.
Thank you, Jill.
May I have a minute to respond?
30 seconds.
30 seconds, I'll take it. I'm glad that Senator Vogel said I know the facts. I appreciate that because I do know the facts, and we all know the facts. The facts are the facts, and it would have required an invasive ultrasound of women forced by the state. You mentioned I've never spent any time around the legislative process. I actually worked in the United States Senate. I don't know if you knew that. But, you know, there are many things about my background that you may not know, you may want to dismiss, but the key is not, again, personal attacks. I've not levied one personal attack against you, and I know in your primary it got incredibly personal, and in many of your races it gets very personal, and that's not the kind of primary in politics that we want to see in the Commonwealth of Virginia. We're going to stick to the facts.
30 seconds.
I would just say that I appreciate Justin's positions, and I'm not interested in, again, levying attacks or making this a hyperpartisan discussion. It's a question of, do we make the right decision? I withdrew, as I mentioned, the bill when it became a hyper-partisan discussion, and I thought at the time was incredibly unconstructive. And so just from my position, I would say my commitment to the citizens of the Commonwealth of Virginia, should you elect me, is your next lieutenant governor, is to be fair and open-minded and principled and put women's health and all the other issues associated with families first above all.
Thank you, Jill. You get the last question first. The last question is, the most important right is to your health. How important is women's reproductive rights to your plan for Virginia?
As I mentioned, I have been an advocate for women's health. I've been an advocate for women across the board, access to more accessible and affordable health care. Certainly women, moms, are the ones who suffer the most when it comes to issues with their families being sick. I have worked with countless women on issues related to autism coverage for their children and their families. So I am an advocate for women. I am not running for lieutenant governor to take anybody's rights away, period. I want to be very clear about that. But what I am running to do is to support women and to give women more information and more options. And I will just tell you that we haven't had women involved in politics in Virginia forever. I am the first person in the history of the Commonwealth of Virginia, the General Assembly, which many people don't know, is the longest, oldest continuing legislative body in the Western Hemisphere. I'm the first person to ever have a child while in office. It's pretty extraordinary. And I remember I was serving on the Aspen Institute at the time with elected office holders, Republicans and Democrats from all around the country. And I said, this baby is going to be the first. And they didn't believe me. So I will tell you, we have a long way to go in the Commonwealth of Virginia. But as somebody who has broken new ground, who has fought for women, who has been engaged, women are the heads of households. They make many of the decisions for their families. And so my commitment is to always stick up for women, and to do everything I can to help promote women, help promote women's issues, and focus above all on women's health. Healthcare is, I would argue, probably the biggest, other than the economy, the biggest issue we deal with right now in Virginia. Accessibility, decision-making, affordability.
Thank you, Jill Bogle. Justin Fairfax, same question.
Yes, women's reproductive health, their ability to control their own decisions, their own healthcare, is a central and paramount issue here in the Commonwealth of Virginia and in this country. It is both a matter of their health and their safety. They should get to control their own bodies. They should not be forced into having procedures by the state, by legislators who are not doctors, attempting to pass laws that force women and get between them and their doctors. But it's also an economic issue. And Senator Vogel mentioned that there are plenty of women who head households, who are the primary breadwinner, who need to have control of their own health care decisions. But when you have a government and legislators who are intent on forcing women to have a procedure or not have a procedure, getting in between that doctor-patient relationship, you then undermine the very thing that you said was important. So again, this is really about saying one thing and doing another. Just because you say you're a champion for women's health doesn't make it so. And you can say it 100, 1,000, a million times, it really matters what you've done. And again, that legislation and other legislation that you have voted for, either sponsored or supported, has undermined women's ability to control their own reproductive health care. So I'm proud to have the support and endorsement of Planned Parenthood, also NARAL Pro-Choice Virginia. And again, women all across the Commonwealth of Virginia who should be entitled to the exact same freedoms that men have. I have a son and a daughter, and I want them to have the exact same shot in life as one another. I don't want my daughter to be forced into a certain condition because of what legislators tell her she can and cannot do with her own health care and her own body. So it will be an important thing, and we'll move forward to make sure women are protected in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Thank you, Justin. Jill, up to a minute.
So I would just say, to be clear, I am not running for office in the Commonwealth of Virginia, and certainly not for lieutenant governor to take anybody's rights away. But there are larger missions related to healthcare that are very valuable, and it shouldn't be all about partisanship and rhetoric. It should be about doing what's right for women and for families and for public health.
Thank you, Jill. Justin Fairfax.
I get 30 seconds. Also, just want to take this moment to talk about Medicaid expansion, something that I fully support in the Commonwealth of Virginia. It would cover 400,000 more Virginians, including a lot of women and a lot of children. It would bring 30,000 more jobs to Virginia. We've lost $10.4 billion in federal money by not having expanded Medicaid. We're one of only 19 states not to have expanded Medicaid. Senator Vogel said that she is 100% against Medicaid expansion. Again, 31 other states in the District of Columbia have already expanded Medicaid. So we talked about, Senator Vogel talked about affordability and access to high-quality health care. That's what Medicaid expansion is about, and I fully support it.
Thank you, Justin Fairfax. That concludes the question and answer portion of the response.
May I ask a question? May I respond to the Medicaid expansion for a moment?
30 seconds.
Okay. I would just like to say that I think his view might be very, very different if he served on the Finance Committee and had to make some of those difficult finance decisions. Medicaid right now, without adding another person, is already almost one quarter of our general fund. And I cannot commit the Commonwealth of Virginia to more money that we cannot afford, which has got to come from somewhere, infrastructure, K-12, something, until we know what Congress is going to do. It is a question of being responsible, of being fiscally careful in managing our taxpayer resources so that we don't undermine the health care of the people currently in Virginia.
Thank you. Each candidate now has up to 2.5 minutes for a closing statement. Justin Fairfax, you're first.
Yes. Well, thank you, Bob. And again, just to that last point, my view would actually be exactly the same. I would still support Medicaid expansion, just as Governor McAuliffe has and Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam and Attorney General Mark Herring. It is not only the right thing to do morally to give 400,000 more Virginians access, but it's the right thing to do for our budget and for our economy. There was an MIT study done that said that expansion was covered, you know, by the federal government 100% for the first several years, and that went down to 90% as of 2020. It is smart fiscally. It also is the right thing to do morally. And I will just conclude again by saying I'm honored to be here today at Piedmont Virginia Community College. Bob, thank you for your leadership. To our president, thank you for opening up this great institution named after a great man, this particular building, a great legislator who was focused on improving access to education and healthcare and the economy. And that's really where we've got to be focused, is creating economic growth, continuing to drive the economic growth that we have seen over the last 4 years under the leadership of Governor Terry McAuliffe and Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam and Attorney General Mark Herring. We, again, have seen unemployment go down from 5.4% to 3.7%. These are facts. These are numbers. We have seen 200,000 more jobs come to the Commonwealth of Virginia in the last 4 years, $16 billion in capital investment. Personal incomes have risen in those 4 years by 13%. So these are real. These are impacting the daily lives of our families, of our businesses, and of everyone who wants a shot at the American dream. So again, there are two very stark visions in this particular election and with our respective tickets. It's either continuing and advancing to build and grow our economy, to create jobs, to give more people economic security and opportunity, or going down this road of partisan, divisive legislation, again, that has made us when it was introduced, the laughingstock of the country, of actually stripping away people's rights, whether or not we say we are. We have got to go to a place where we are growing this economy to create more opportunity for everyone. We have seen the successes of the last 4 years. We can accelerate and make sure that more people get middle-skilled jobs, that we expand Medicaid, and that we make sure that everyone has the opportunity to rise, no matter where they start, how much money their family has or does not have. They too will get a shot at the American dream. It's what you make possible every day here at this community college. It's what we want to make possible for everyone here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. So thank you all for having me. Be honored to earn your support November the 7th. Thank you.
Thank you, Justin. Jill Vogel, your final closing statement.
I would just love to say thank you to everybody who has participated. Some of you have been very interested, obviously, and then I have two children over there that went to sleep. So what does that say? I just wanted to say this was really important and really meaningful. I hope that you have the ability to discern from our different positions how very different we are. And I respect his positions. I respect our differences. But it's also important to note that he's actually different than other folks on the rest of his ticket in a way that I think helps inform all of us that Virginians are very, very focused on making Virginia a well-managed state. Not slogans, not, you know, sort of ideas that are outside the mainstream that will really undermine Virginia's ability to do well. And the facts don't lie. He mentioned that we've been on this, you know, amazing trajectory, and we have not. We absolutely have not. Over the last 4 years, we have seen Virginia consistently drop. We are the slowest growing economy on the entire East Coast other than Delaware. And Delaware has fewer people than Fairfax County. So at the end of the day, the statistics don't lie. What we need is transformative leadership in the lieutenant governor's position that is open-minded, that will put principle over party, that will look to address issues of taxes and regulations. And if you want somebody who's going to raise taxes, add more regulations, have more government involved in your business and your life, I'm not your person. And I think that that is fundamentally where most people are. One of the things that my colleague in this race has advocated is single-payer health care. I mean, that's really not where Virginians are and not what's going to affect probably the single biggest issue we have in the Commonwealth of Virginia, which is health care, access, and affordability. And we need Virginia to be freed up to make good decisions for our budget and good decisions for our citizens without the federal government pressing more on us and Richmond pressing down more on us. And so I would just like to say thank you. I appreciate all of those who came, those who are hosted, our moderator, and I would love to have your support in the November election. Thank you.
Thank you, Jill Vogel. That concludes today's candidate forum. Let's have a round of applause for both candidates.